Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we will be reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 27, entitled Indra and Sarabi Offer Prayers, specifically text number 21.
Indram nastra bishek shamo.
Indram nastra bishek shamo.
Indram nastra bishek shamo.
Indram nastra bishek shamo.
Brahmana jodita vayam.
Brahmana
jodita vayam. Avatirno Sivishvatman.
Avatirno Sivishvatman.
Avatirno Sivishvatman.
Avatirno Sivishvatman.
Bhumir Bharapanuttaye.
Bhumir
Bharapanuttaye.
Indram
nastra bishek shamo. Brahmana chodita vayam. Avatirno sivishvatman. Bhumye bharapanuttaye.
Of coronation. Brahmana, by Lord Brahma, Choditaha, ordered, Vayam, we, Avatirna, Avatirna Asi, sorry, you have descended, Vishvaatman, O soul of the universe, Bhumahe, of the earth. Para, the burden. Apanuteya, in order to alleviate. Translation and purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Translation: as ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descended to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Translation responsibly. Please repeat. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descended to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Purport. Sarabi makes it quite clear in this verse that she has had enough of the leadership of imperfect demigods like Purandara, Indra. And now she is determined to directly serve the Supreme Lord. Since Brahma has ordered her, her attempt to coronate Lord Krishna as her personal Lord is authorized by higher authority. Moreover, Lord Krishna himself comes down to the earth to relieve the burden of self-destructive, mundane administration. Jai. And thus it is perfectly consistent with the Lord's own purpose that he become the Lord of Sarabi. Since the Lord rules millions of universes, he can certainly take care of Mother Sarabi. In fact, Sarabi wanted to bathe the Lord for her own purification, and she earnestly makes her proposal to Vishvatma, the soul of the universe, Sri Krishna. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra, O soul of the universe. You descended to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Om Gyana Tavananda Shakanantraya Shalakaya Chakshuan Malitam Yena Tasmaya Shuguravena Maha Jai Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
I was just thinking just then actually that today is a very, today marks the anniversary of many events here. One of them, of course, is the appearance day of Lord Nrisimha Day. Another 5 years ago today, actually, is the day that she's not here now. Some of Vrindaranya's family came to Mangalore. And 5 years ago today, me and Shruti arrived in Australia, actually. We came today. 7 years ago today, I had a heart attack. Yeah, it's a very auspicious day. Appearance day of Lord Nrisimha. Actually, I won't speak too much on the Lord's pastimes, just that actually there's an interesting relationship between what we're experiencing right now and the appearance of Lord Nrisimha Dev, because Lord Indra was involved also. And once again, in one sense, he tried to kill some of Krishna's devotees, a very dear devotee of Krishna actually. Indra tried to kill Prahlad Maharaj at Prahlad Maharaj's birth, which is something similar to what we're seeing now, where he was trying to destroy the township of Vrindavan, to kill the residents of Vrindavan. And this, in the situation with Prahlad Maharaj, however, it was he kidnapped Hiranyakashipu's wife, and she was pregnant. Hiranyakashipu had gone off to perform austerities, standing on tiptoes with his arms in the air, looking towards the sky. And this is when Indra came on the scene with the demigods. Actually, all the demigods came and they pillaged Hiranyakashipu's palace. They trashed everything, stole everything that was good, and left everything else behind. Including one thing they took was Hiranyakashipu's wife, because she was pregnant. So they decided that within her womb was the seed of Hiranyakashipu, therefore it would be another great demon would be taking birth. So rather than kill her, because they wouldn't kill a woman, they were taking her captive, and they were going to temporarily store her in the heavenly planets. And then when she gave birth to this great demon, they were expecting they were going to kill the child immediately. So it's a little bit similar to what's happening at the moment. But of course, Narada Muni turned up, and the Bhagavatam explains that Narada Muni had nothing else to do, so he just turned up. So he must just it's quite interesting to try and visualize that. He was just wandering around the universe, and he decided he had nothing better to do, so he'd go to the abode of Hiranyakashipu to see what was happening. And at that moment, he found that the demigods were ransacking the place. He thought, this is interesting. And then, of course, he then heard the screaming of Hiranyakashipu's wife. What's her name? What's her name? Kayaya.
Yeah.
And so they were taking her away, and that's when Narada Muni said, no, you must leave her behind, because actually she is going to give birth to a great devotee. So instead he took her away to look after her, because there was no one left, with Hiranyakashipu currently standing outside an anthill on his tiptoes. There was no one to look after her properly. And of course, while he had her in his ashram, he instructed her in spiritual science. And it's interesting, in the purports to this instruction, while Narada Muni is instructing, it's explained that this is where Prahlad Maharaj was gaining his spiritual knowledge from Narada Muni. And of course, he was an unborn child in the womb of his mother. So Prabhupada explains that this is actually a very significant point, because this is demonstrating that there is actually no material impediment to acquiring spiritual knowledge. Even if you are an unborn child in the womb of your mother, still you can assimilate this knowledge and become spiritually advanced. There is a verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter which was also explaining this point, where it's saying that however you take birth, whatever situation you may be born in, the 32nd verse, which eludes my mind at this present, but anyway, it explains that different, whether you're a low-born personality, you're taking birth in family or shudras, whatever it might be, still you can obtain perfection, even in that situation. And Prabhupada goes on to explain that this is because there's no material impediment to making spiritual advancement. The example set here, though, is also relevant, because Hiranyakashipu was performing huge austerity to achieve his desired goal, which actually, on another side point, isn't anything fabulous. The fact that he desired to live forever and have no one superior to him, and these other things that he desired. Of course, there are many persons who desire the same thing today. It's not that having the desire to live forever, having the desire to have no one superior to you, having the desire to be the controller, is anything unusual. In fact, I was talking to a man in Crossways a few days ago, and he told me, he announced that he doesn't believe in reincarnation. I said, oh, why is that? And he said, well, it's not that I don't believe in it, it's just that it's not relevant to me. Here is a sane, sensible man wearing a suit and tie, if that makes him sane and sensible. But anyway, he was a sensible, ordinary sort of human being, but he said reincarnation doesn't apply to him. And I said, why is that? And he said, because I'm going to live forever. I said, really? That's quite interesting. So unfortunately, at that moment, I took his fork off his plate and placed it just beside his chin. And I said, who can save you right now? And he looked at the fork just next to his neck from his own plate and looked at me with a concerned smile. And he didn't answer. I said, who can save you at this moment if I become a fork-wielding psychopath and stab you? Who will save you? And he said he'd think about it and get back to me. So before he left the restaurant, I went and sat with him again. And I said, have you got any realizations on the conversation we had? There was other parts to it. It wasn't just me stabbing a customer. There was more to it than that. But he said, yes, actually, I've had a major realization into your culture, into your understanding of God. I said, oh, please enlighten me. And he said, I now know why you eat with your fingers. I said, why is that? And he said, so that persons can't grab your fork and kill you with it. I thought, wow. But then he said, no, I understand. He had come to an understanding. He thought that at that moment, nobody could save him. He said that his own prowess would save him for the rest of his life. He went to the gym. He ate very healthy. He only had 2 bowls of halibur and custard every day. He eats very healthy. He comes to CrossFit. He does all these things to prolong his life. He takes various supplements. He thought, then through his meditative process, which he was performing at home every day, that he was going to live forever. So therefore, reincarnation doesn't apply. We discussed further that whether you believe in something or whether you don't, that doesn't make it relevant or not relevant to you. The fact is, these things are going on regardless of what you think. It gave him something to think about. Now when he comes, actually, he eats with a spoon now. Which is quite funny. But he's a nice person, and he comes here occasionally, but I won't mention his name to embarrass him. But anyway, it's interesting that persons may have this thought that they can live forever, even though, as we hear in the Bhagavatam, when persons are constantly surrounded by death, things are dying all the time. Things are growing old and leaving their bodies constantly. And yet still, the thought may be there that that's not going to happen to us. That's not going to be that's not going to be our problem. Just like someone else at Crossways actually came in with a huge suitcase a few days ago. I said, where are you going? He says, oh no, I've just been evicted from my house. I said, oh no, that's sad. Why is this? And he said, well, it's actually my own fault. I was given a month's notice, but I didn't do anything about it. And I smiled. I said, wow, that's just like Prabhupada says something like that only a fool, I said, oh, sorry. Only a fool would make no action. He goes, yes, I am a fool. I did nothing about it. The landlord came and he kicked me out. But he had a month's notice. And I thought, what an interesting thing to see this actually happening, actually in reality, where we're given notice of something and we have notice of our own body's termination, that one day it may finish. Well, it will finish. And there's a certain process of preparation required to prepare us for the next situation. But there may not be a super strong impetus to do that, just because you think, well, I'll do it tomorrow. There's always tomorrow. Because one day there won't be. It's interesting, following the course of the persons trapped underground, those miners, and how long were they underground for? Does anybody know? 2 weeks. 2 weeks. So they had these reporters asked them the questions, and And what's the thing you most want to do when you get out? And what did they say? The thing they most wanted was bacon and eggs. They wanted to go to the pub and they wanted to go to the footy. And it's interesting that in a situation where your life could be challenged, your life could be threatened, then it's a good chance to see what it is we want to take shelter of at that moment. What do we most miss? What are the things that we're most attached to? Because that's going to be our vehicle onto our next situation. Hiranyakashipu, on the other hand, of course, back to Hiranyakashipu for a moment, I was reading this morning, actually, the descriptions of his request to Lord Brahma. In the play that we're doing tonight, there is some mention of his requests, which are trying to make him eternal, regardless of the fact that he knows that he's trying to kill someone who is deathless. He knows that he's in a situation which is seemingly hopeless, but still he's going to try and protect himself by getting boons, by getting benedictions, which are going to make him almost the same as being deathless. And having actually written them down, quite interesting. Because he also, it's interesting how he asks not to be killed by an animal or a person or in the day or in the night or by a weapon or by a demon or by a devotee or by a huge serpent from the lower planets. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that because he was actually very intelligent, he knew that the Sudarshan Chakra could appear even if Krishna wasn't present. So therefore he wanted the benediction that no weapon could kill him. So this covered the Sudarshan Chakra, because even though Krishna may not personally be there to throw it, it was still a weapon, it wasn't a person. He didn't want to be killed by an animal because he knew that his brother had been killed by Lord Vishnu, tricking him by changing himself into a boar and killing him that way. So by asking all these things, he potentially was going to make himself deathless. What a huge austerity, though. It's a nice picture in the seventh canto which shows Hiranyakashipu's body eaten away with his arms in the air and a huge anthill had formed around him. And you think, well, maybe this is another option. Devotional service is getting a bit tough. Crossways is getting a bit austere. We could all go out to the banks of the Yarra and stand there on tiptoes with our arms in the air, looking towards the sky for 10,000 years and wait to get a result. Anyone who's done the yoga, of course, actually will know that even just 2 minutes standing with your arms out to one side on tiptoes is very difficult. What to speak of day and night standing like that? So actually we've got the best option. We've got the best opportunity to become Krishna conscious in the association of devotees living where we are, because we can see other alternatives to achieve some great benefit that are actually extremely difficult to perform. And of course nowadays they're impossible to perform, I could say. It's the significance where, in the purport, back to Mother Sarabi for a moment, that she said how she's fed up with demigods such as Indra being her imperfect master. A few verses further on, it explains how this is a ceremony where Krishna becomes Govinda. Yeah, but where Krishna becomes Govinda. Actually, which must have happened a couple of months ago. Do you know what day that particular ceremony is? Because we gave a shalagram shila to Ganga Shraya Prabhu on that exact same day. It was the end of last year, was it? And that's why he calls him Govinda. It was just a coincidence that was that day. But anyway, this is where, so they have the coronation ceremony, Krishna becomes Govinda, the protector of the cows, giver of pleasure to the cows. And in that the purport explains that actually this is very significant, that she has realized, and she is saying that the demigods can't give complete protection. Only Krishna can do that. And the demigods have their purpose to play, but Krishna is the supreme protector. And then the verse is quoted from the Bhagavad Gita, how my devotee never perishes. Of course, this isn't, it's not unusual that we see Krishna protecting his devotee. I'm remembering when I was in Mayapur recently, and we're at the Jagannath Mandir, and as I told the story last time actually, but there's another very nice pastime about Krishna protecting his devotees. And it was One day, one of Lord Jagannath's pujaris was very sick. He was so sick, actually, that he couldn't move. He was bedridden. And he had some condition with his eyes where everything was so bright. Even the dim room was so bright. So he took a gumsha and he bound his head up with his gumsha. And he lay there in the darkness. And his, but he couldn't eat, he couldn't do anything. And he just lay there thinking about his Lord. But as days went on, his body started to dysfunction as well. And he started actually passing stolen urine in his bed. He couldn't move. He couldn't do anything about it. And at the end of one such day, someone came to serve him. Someone came to change his bedding, change his clothes and wash his body. But he was so helpless he couldn't move. He lay there with his gumsha wrapped around his head. And the same thing happened for three days. At the end of each day, as far as he could tell, one of the other pujaris would come. And he'd say, "Who is it? Which one of you is doing this? Please don't do this. This is so horrible for you to have to do this." But still, it went on. So on the fourth day, he decided, "I'm going to catch whoever it is out." So he managed to part his gumshoe a little bit, made a tiny gap over one eye, and he lay there with his eyes shut. And in the evening, just as previously, the person came in, started changing his bedding, washing his body. And ha! He opened his eyes and caught him. And of course, who was it? Who was the person who had come to look after this very sick pujari? None other than Lord Jagannath himself. And the pujari was shocked. He said, "No, my lord, why are you doing this? This is so abominable, cleaning up such horrible things, having to wash my body, change my bedding. Why are you doing this?" And Lord Jagannath smiled, as of course he does so well. Lord Jagannath smiled and said, "I'm doing this because I love you." And the pujari thought for a moment. And he said, "Do you really love me?" And Lord Jagannath said, "Yes." And the pujari said, "Well, if you really love me, how about you just make me well again?" He said, "Because that way, I wouldn't be distressed by you having to clean up after me, and you wouldn't have to clean up after me, and I could carry on serving you. This is the best situation. Just make me well." And Lord Jagannath smiled and said, "Because I love you, that is why you are sick." Pujari didn't understand this, so he remained silent for some time, and he said, "I don't understand. What do you mean, because you love me, that's why I'm sick?" And he said, "Well, if I made you well like that, you would have no impetus to leave this material world. But instead, because you've got some suffering, it'll make you more attached to me. It'll make you love me more, and then you will come back." And the Pujari said, "Jai, Jagannath ki jai." He was amazed that his situation, his life was being arranged in such a way. He thought the best thing was to be well. That way the Lord wouldn't be serving him. But actually, Lord Jagannath explained that the best thing is for this bit of suffering will give you impetus to become Krishna conscious. And as I was hearing this pastime, as Janani Vasprabhu was explaining this, I was thinking, wow, because a lot of us were quite sick at that time. I was thinking, wow, we're all getting some special mercy to remember that that this material world isn't our own abode. And that Krishna is our only shelter, as Mother Saravi is saying here. Jai. So at that point I might stop and say, Vashinga Bhagavan ki. Jai. Are there any comments or questions or additions? I know we put our Thanksgiving discourse tonight, which will be just on the one appearance of Lord Nishingadev. So that's apparently it. From 5 until 6. Abhishek and apply. Don't forget it's fast today. Starts at 4 o'clock tonight. Hopefully everyone can come. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Nrisimha Bhagavan ki. Jai. Gaura Premanadi.